Blog Talk Radio.
There's a direct relationship between having the businesses and being in prison. Go find see how many Asians you can find in American prisons. You ain't gonna be in there. But 51% of your prison will be black because blacks don't have any businesses and industries. There's a direct link. Blacks won't practice group economics. Blacks won't practice group politics. If you don't practice, you're setting yourself up. I told that five-story building, you're setting yourself to get wiped out. Understand the nature of race, which is economics. If you build the first floor, it's economic. Build your businesses and your industries. Control business and industry, and put that pulls in your money, and hold that money, and practice group economics with it. Arab and Asian money bounces 12 to 13 times for at least. Jewish money bounces 18 times. Black folk got to learn how to practice group economics. Black Americans spend every penny they get outside their own community. Then you take the money and the wealth that you get from that first floor and go to the second floor. The second floor is politics. You then take that money on the first floor and you control your politics. Black folk must quit allowing people to tell them to go out and vote. Vote for what? Nobody's going to do anything for black folk in politics. Politics is controlled by money. Major corporations who got the money. That's what controls politics. If you have no money, you have no say-so, you have no benefits coming. So you take your money and you control and you take your money on the first floor, you buy every politician on the second floor. And any politician you can't buy, you rent or lease them to get what you need. Then once you get the second floor under control with the politician, with your money, then you go to the third floor. The third floor then is the police department and the court system. You take your money from the first floor and your politics on the second floor and you control the court system and the police department. Then the fourth floor is media. You then take the money that you generate off the first floor from business and industries and you go after radio stations, TV stations, newspapers, and cable systems so that you can now inform and communicate with your own people. Right now, black folk only control less than 35 thousandths of 1% of the media in the United States. Out of 12,000 radio stations, black folk own about 75 or 80. That's all. You own no cable systems. You don't have a daily newspaper. You have nothing of importance. You got about one black TV station. So you can't communicate with your people. You can't inform your people. You can't do anything. You can have Rush Limbaugh and all the rest of the guys talking about racism all day long and bad-mouthing you. And O'Reilly. They can call black folk all kind of names all day long. What are you going to do? You can't respond. You can't even communicate with your own people because you don't have an economic base. 51% of all the prisons in the United States are black people. You know, you only make up 12% of the population. That's no accident. It's because you don't control the economics and the politics. And they're going to go after the weakest people they can get their hands on to incarcerate. That's the black folk. And what are you going to do in response to them when they over-incarcerate you? You're going to go out and have a march, a demonstration. We're going to march. March for what? Who cares? Marching never changed anything.
I'm
many a young athlete entertains hoop dreams. Few, if any, have tried as hard to make them come true as the kid our Steve Hartman has gone to see.
Every week, he set himself up for disappointment. Every week, 13-year-old Jamarian Stiles came to this community center in Boca Raton, Florida, hoping to play basketball with the other kids. And every week, he was rejected.
They'll start picking teams, and I would be the only one left out. And then they'll just tell me, just go home and stuff. You can break someone's heart like that.
The problem was obvious to everyone but Jamarian. He lost his hands and most of his arms as an infant due to a rare bacterial infection. But he insisted that was no reason to give up his hoop dreams.
What about soccer? Have you heard of that sport?
Yeah, hear it every day.
Why don't you play soccer? That just seems like the obvious thing.
You would think that I would be good at soccer. I'm really not. I'm horrible.
Which is why, on the first day of class here at Eagles Landing Middle School, Jamarian took his case to basketball coach Darian Williams.
Yeah.
Said he wanted to be on the team this year.
I said, all great, well, just make sure you try out.
He said, okay, great, but what are you really thinking?
This man has no arms.
Yeah.
How is he going to play basketball? But man, he told me, Mr. Williams, I've never been on a team before. Even if I don't play, I just want to be on the team. And how could I say no to that?
And that's how the Eagles got their first armless basketball player. Jamarian, number two there, quickly earned a reputation as the hardest worker on the squad.
He was usually the first one in the gym, usually the last one to leave.
Still, he sat on the bench most of the season.
Try one more.
Until last month. Coach put him in the game with about 6 minutes left. And when he eventually got the ball on the far side of the court, everyone yelled, shoot it! So he did. And sank. A three-pointer. And if you didn't quite see that, don't worry. Because shortly after, he got the ball again. This time on the near side. For another three-pointer. At the buzzer. Jamarian Stiles. The kid no one would pick. Was now everyone's hero. Needless to say, today, Jamarian can play all he wants at the community center. He just made the volleyball team and has every intention of playing football next year. Really, the only thing he won't play is the victim.
If I could wave a magic wand right now and give you your arms back, would you want them?
I don't need them.
You don't need them?
No.
Who needs hands when you've got this kind of touch?
Now, learn this from Joel Osteen. That's my man. He be texting me. That's my man. This God done put some people around me, show me some stuff. He was telling this story. He said this man that went to heaven, and he was walking with Peter down this aisleway, and it was going down this corridor, had a lot of doors on it, and said all these doors had names on it. And he said, Peter, let me ask you something. What's all these doors, these names on? He said, don't worry about it. Just go ahead. So he kept walking. He messed around. He saw one of them doors and had his name on it. He said, whoa. He said, hey, Peter, this here ain't got my name on it. Something I need to know? He said, man, don't worry about that. You here now. Just go on in there and talk to him. See what he's here. He said, nah, I want to know what's in the door. He said, you sure you want to see what's in the door? He said, yeah. So he opened up the door. It was a warehouse. It had nothing but shelves on it. And then the shelves had nothing but packages. And all the packages had his name on them. And he said, what is all these boxes? He said, that's all of the blessings, all of the things God wanted to ship to you. But number one, you didn't ask him for it. Then number two, you didn't believe you would have it. Then you doubted him, and then you felt like you wasn't worthy, and so now all these boxes is up here. Now the man standing there wishing he had never even been in the room, and I started thinking. I got some dudes that work for me, and I said, I want you to do this graph for me, and that's what I'm finna show you now. See, what you happen is, when God sends your package, he only sends it to one street. That's Faith Street. You got to stay in faith. You can't move off of Faith Street. You can't get on Doubted Drive. You can't be over there and start doubting because your package going to go right on by. You can't lose your faith and get on not meant to be way, because your package is going to keep going right on by. Because the package just go to Faith Street. You can get your little feelings hurt, I ain't worthy. Guess what? Your package going to keep going right on by. You have not because you ask not. Then you sit up here and start feeling sorry for yourself. You go on pity way, your package keep going right on by. If you stay right on Faith Street, don't ever come off, because the blessing is coming. If you wait on it, here it comes. It may not come when you want it, but it's on time. But if you get up and you move off of Faith Street, your box gonna get sent back to sender. And now you're gonna have a warehouse with a bunch of boxes with your name on it that you didn't never get. And I don't know about you, but I want everything he got for me. If he got something for me, I need all of mine. Because I don't know about you, but God lay you out, man. God will give you stuff. Man, he done took me places I ain't never thought I was going to go. I done seen parts of the world I never even thought I could go to. He done gave me stuff. He done put people in my life. God will do it for you, man. But you just got to stay, man. Use these principles of success. Understand, God is just that way. He'll lay you out. Because if he can lay me out, see, if he fix me and change me and get me over here trying to do better, I ain't perfect. I'm just trying to do better. I still say some stuff I ain't supposed to say. You understand? I ain't got it all together yet. I just got in the gate. I'm a new kind of Christian. But ain't no lock on my gate either. So if you see, once you check me, I'm probably going to check you back. But I'm getting better at that. I don't know how to love my enemies yet. I'm getting better at it, though. But it's a process. And the more times we can make people understand that it's a process, the more people can come in. And y'all people that have been good to me, that have been praying for me. I mean, man, my mama, if she could see me now, I just wish my mama could see me. Because she's been praying for this hill all her life. Watch my son. Well, he done watched me, mama. And I'm cool now. And my philosophy is very simple. I was who I was, but I am who I am. And I'm cool with both them people. Because who I was wasn't that bad a cap. I made some mistakes, but I've been changed a little bit. And it's still a process. And the more people that you invite into the process, the better this is. Because ain't nobody perfect no how. So I really appreciate y'all, man, hearing me and listening to me. I'm going to ask Kirk Franklin if he will come.
Friends, it is time once again for our daily message of hope. And with today's message, here is Richard Eaton.
Friends, to brighten your day, here is our message of hope. A man who taught many wonderful truths about life once said, "Make the most of your present opportunities. Make the most of your present opportunities." Let me repeat once again. Make the most of your present opportunities. And the longer I live, the more convinced I am, this is a wonderful piece of advice. Appreciate the present before it becomes the past. Make the most of your present opportunities. So many of us waste our present time worrying about the past or the future. And actually, we can do nothing about either the past or the future. Little sympathy or patience should be wasted on the person who is eternally crying for the good old days or bemoaning that things aren't as they used to be. Naturally, they aren't. Time changes all things, as it is changing you right now. And were it not for change, there could be no progress in this world of ours. Probably a good bit of advice to all of us would be to live every moment as it comes to us, just as though it were the only one we had on earth. To appreciate the present before it becomes the past. Let your life be filled now with love,
with happiness, with harmony, with courage, with faith. Too many of us are wasting energy trying to relive the past. And we are putting off our good from day to day, from month to month, and from year to year, so that we never quite catch up with it. Why not live now? Forget the troubles of the past and stop dreading the future. The expression of our powers and abilities is governed by our thoughts. If our thoughts are dwelling in the past or in the future, our power and abilities will be lessened in the present, because they will be trying to follow our thoughts to realms that do not exist. We need all our abilities right now in the present moment. We cannot afford to dissipate them by letting our mind dwell on the past or by worrying about the future. If we live rightly every present moment, we shall have no occasion to mourn over the past. What does it really matter today, what happened yesterday, or some other day in the past? It is beyond our recall, so it is not worth the effort of worrying about it. Dr. Frank Crane expressed a bit of good philosophy on this matter in his short article called The Past. Says Dr. Crane, a good deal of morbid nonsense has been said and written and thought about the past. The past is irrevocable. We have been told in sermon and story, you cannot escape the past. The past can never be changed. And so on and so on. The whole trend of this thought being that the past is a kind of a Sherlock Holmes, dogging our steps forever, a sinister nemesis, waiting its chance to strike us down, the account book of an angry God, sure to confront us someday. All of this is morbid. Most of it is dramatic. The underlying sentiment of it is false, weakening, and septic. As a matter of fact, our past, as Maeterlinck puts it so well, depends on our present and changes with it. Our past depends on our present and changes with it. What the past is depends upon the way you are now using it. Its effect upon your destiny will be gauged by how you translate it into the future. If we brood over the past and weaken ourselves with vain regret, with self-contempt and remorse, then that past will poison and undo us in the present. But no matter what the past contains of our sin or folly, we can, by a right use of it now, make it minister to our welfare. First of all, we can learn wisdom from the past. By it, we can realize our faults to be corrected and our offenses to be atoned for. And with this wisdom, we can go on to better things. The only true repentance is so to use the past as to enable us to build a better future. Weeping and wailing and brooding, those are the luxuries of morbidity. The past is beneath our feet. We can go down into it and wallow in impotent grief, or we can step upon that past to higher things. The great enemy of life is despair. The great friend is hope. Despair paralyzes, ruins. Hope energizes, for we are saved by hope. Face the future. Whatever the past has been, let it nerve you to spend your remaining days in faithfulness and loyalty to your better self. These are the words of Dr. Frank Crane, and I feel he certainly has the right view. Be concerned about your past only to the extent that it can teach you. The mistakes and sorrows of yesterday belong to yesterday. Yesterday provided sufficient time in which to consider its woes. Most of the worries, the griefs, the heartaches that we suffer are nothing more or less than memory of the troubles and hurts that we experienced sometime in the past. if we could only remember that sufficient unto the day is the evil thereof. Moffat renders this passage as a day's own trouble is quite enough for the day. And when you stop to think of it, isn't this true? We can readily understand from this that the miseries or woes of yesterday can enter today or tomorrow only through our memory. Before the end of yesterday, we should have put out of mind every disturbing thought caused by yesterday's situations. Those were yesterday's problems, so let them along with yesterday pass from sight and from memory. Let not the sun go down from your wrath is a mighty good bit of advice, or so it seems to me. We should not let the day close with our mind disturbed. It is too late to do anything about the way we let yesterday close. But we can do something about the way we let today close. Let us set today free in order that we may meet tomorrow, another new day, fresh and clean and unused, in the right spirit. Our wrath, mental disturbance, and physical miseries of yesterday have no place in our today. They only serve to crowd out the joys and blessings that are in store for us today. Each new day, a new world will begin for us if we do not carry into it the woes of yesterday. If we have not forgotten the woes of yesterday, we do not really experience a new day. To us, the day is just an extension of yesterday. When we let yesterday's sun go down, finding us wrathful and disturbed in mind, we are not obeying the biblical injunction to forget our miseries. We are not approaching the new day with a clear mind and a clean heart. The wisely given command to forget is a provision for our happiness. Were we to remember all our mistakes of the past, we should not have time to think of the good we want. Thou shalt forget thy misery. What shall we forget? What does the misery include? What comes under the category of wrath of mind? Everything not founded upon God or good and truth. It was meant that we should enjoy today to the exclusion of the wraths and miseries of yesterday. We are not to let one little rankling thought of yesterday sully the purity and beauty of today. You know, friends, the sleep that God gives us at night is but a form of his power to help us forget. Sleep is a vestibule through which we pass from one day to the next. We are to shed all our useless thoughts before we approach the next day. What of the wrongs that someone had committed against us yesterday or some other day? What of our jealousies and suspicions? What are the things we secretly accuse ourselves of? All these must go. We must forget them. They belong to the dream or nightmare of the past, in which we have awakened to a new day. Are you willing to obey the command, "Thou shalt forget thy miseries"? You alone can decide. You alone can reap the benefits of forgetting. You alone can decide whether you will spoil this new day, fresh and clean and unused, by harboring the adverse thoughts of yesterday. You alone can decide whether you will today remain in the wrathful state of mind of yesterday, or whether you will make the most of your present opportunities. The things of yesterday brought to your mind, which caused you to be disturbed, are quite insignificant today. Forget them. Learn to wipe from mind every thought that works against your highest good. Enjoy today to the fullest. You can do this only by approaching it with a clear mind, receptive to the good in store for you. Let each new day begin life anew for you, rather than being merely an extension of yesterday. Start out this morning by obeying the command to forget. Make up your mind you are not going to try to carry yesterday along into this brand new day. Erase from your mind any sense of blame, any memory of failure, all sorts of wrongs of the past. Was it not Ruskin who said, "Let every dawn of morning be to you as the beginning of life, and every setting sun be to you as its close"? Then let every one of these short lives leave its sure record of some kindly thing done for others, some goodly strength or knowledge gained for yourself. Let me repeat, let every dawn of morning be to you as the beginning of life, and every setting sun be to you as its close. Then let every one of these short lives leave its sure record of some kindly thing done for others, some goodly strength or knowledge gained for yourselves. It behooves all of us to live in the present in the way that will make of our future that which we wish our present were now. Yes, friends, it's up to us. We can go down into and wallow in impotent grief, or we can step upon the past to higher things. It is up to us. And so, friends, you've been listening once again to our message of hope. God bless you, everyone.
He's saying no. He's saying we fought for everyone in them towers. We give it up now when Marcus is weak. He's saying if we do this, Prop Joe would have it over us, and we might never get out from under.
We don't have the product or the muscle.
I told him. I did. He says he's still trying to find us a better connect. And for muscle, he's saying he's sending us the best he can find. Brother Muzon.
He's sending him, brother?
From New York. Coming down to work on retainer. For as long as we need.
Brother Muzon.
Yep.
You fucking with me, right? Brother Muzon from NYC.
I went to Avon and told him I didn't have enough muscle to hold down them towers, played it like that.
Yeah, and he reached out.
Yo, I'm still holding on to this deal. You know what I'm saying? This is just some shit that we gotta deal with.
Deal with how?
My nigga, I would take the motherfucker out if I could, but Avon can't know it came from his own people, right?
You don't think I'm gonna send any of my people up against brother? Shit. That nigga got more bodies on him than a Chinese cemetery.
True.
Look, I'm just saying, this your problem, not mine. You want my product, you need to deal with it.
All right, so listen, we got some time here. All right? Avon got to send up word, wait for word to come back, set up a price, talk to Brother Muzon, I mean, set up the whole shit, and that's like a week or maybe two. And by that time, your people's going to be in the towers. And if the money's right, then that is what it is. Ain't no nigga from New York gonna change the facts from the ground. All right?
all believe as a race, I'm not talking about you specifically, but do you believe as a race, African Americans, we play the victim?
Hey, man.
I have a dream.
No. I'm just going to leave that as a one-word answer. I'm not even going to jump in deeper than that. No.
Yeah, I'm on the side of absolutely not, and I will leave it there until somebody disagrees.
Yeah, then I'll jump back in. And now I'm gonna step back.
Well, you know, I mean, I'm gonna be real. I'm gonna say yes.
Let's go.
I'm gonna say yes.
Give me an example.
See, it's a loaded question just because I'm not going to sit here and say every single African-American size either on the yes side or on the no side.
Mm-hmm.
I say yes to mainly spark conversation, but also I know you're not talking, you said not personal experiences, but that's all I got to go on. I will say, you know, just based on where I am in life, I've gotten a lot of pressure from African-Americans feeling like, you know, I've gotten to where I am because of white people, or you can't speak, you didn't grow up like I did. Like, I came from the hood, you know, I didn't have the same opportunities and privileges that other people had. And though, you know, I believe that to be true, in today's America, I really do feel like anybody has the opportunity to rise to the occasion. Now, is it easier for certain people over others? Yeah, I mean, let's be real, yes. Like, that's 100% true. But, you know, I just keep hearing, like, systemic oppression, this, that, and the third. Like, yeah, we get it. I know. Like, we all know. Like, we all know. But the opportunities are still there. Will you have to work a little bit harder to get to where you want to be? Absolutely. Because of how you look? Absolutely. I'm a testament of it.
Anybody gonna say nothing?
I want to hear this.
I think it's impossible to accuse us of playing the victim. You're talking about a 400 plus year head start for a particular set of people. You're talking about systematic oppression. That's what I meant by a post-traumatic state. Is we're at this stage in 2020. We're trained to say, yeah, it's unequal, but that's just not okay to me. I don't think we should ever get to the place where we just accept inequality.
Correct.
I'm not encouraging stagnation, so I agree with you. I'm not encouraging throwing in the towel like, yo, it's not fair. That's not what I'm saying at all. But while striving to be your best self, you should never accept inequality. And I think that's what we're being trained to kind of just be like, yo, this is just the way it is, and to no longer call it out. And I'm not even saying we got to go picket, protest. I'm not saying none of that. But at least in conversations like this, if we're not going to set a standard, no standard is going to be set. Nobody else is going to stand it. Nobody else is going to set it. You're talking about, statistically, like factually speaking, at the onset of the 20th century, you're talking about landowners only giving land to specific races. That's generational wealth.
Yeah.
You're talking about bank loans only being given to specific races.
How can you?
That's generational wealth.
Correct.
So we can't. It's not even like this is ancient history. That's what blows my mind. This is recent history.
But he didn't say that that didn't happen.
Mm-hmm.
What he said was, "Do we play the victim?"
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's very different. You're aware of the things that have happened, but are you victimized as a result of it?
So,
do you say, this is what I can do with what I have been allotted or whatever my place in life is? Are we playing the victim is the question.
Well, I think we have to define play the victim. Okay. Yeah, I think we are the victim.
Because anybody can be a victim.
I think we are factually a victim.
So all races can be victims.
What do we call in playing the victim?
What do you see that as then?
What do I see what as?
Playing the victim, like when you hear that, like what does that trigger for
play,
you?
Play the victim means I'm acting like something is being done to me that's not being done
or
to me.
Or always complaining.
That's what I hear.
Always complaining about our history.
That's what I hear when I hear play the victim. Like you're taking the position that something being done to you and nothing's being done to you. That's somebody playing a victim to me.
This is what I
and
hear.
And that's not the case to me.
This
you know
is what
I mean?
I hear.
Yeah.
Get over slavery. Stop talking about it. We're all equal now. You should be ahead where you should be further than where you're at. Stop talking about the old days. I'm gonna stop right there.
Yeah,
that's what
so,
that's what it triggers in my head.
So to say, like, we can't, I don't think you can outrule or, like, just say, hey, we're, some black people aren't playing the victim because people, everyone uses excuses.
Correct.
And people can be using excuse, playing the victim by whatever excuse they may bring. But like you said, and like you said, like, we weren't given an opportunity basically to build that generational wealth. And without that opportunity, we don't own anything. So we are having to kind of look for employment like at wherever you work. And even you said you have, there's one person at D1 that's black. There's, and we're 15% of the nation. That's not an accurate representation of America. So therefore we may not be playing a victim, but we're getting hurt in corporate America or whatever part of life.
Yeah,
that's kind of just statistics.
I'm going to agree with him. You know, I also don't like the term playing the victim because it does sound like you're alluding to something that is not real.
Mm-hmm.
And I think if we, you know, I'm not dismissing or negating the effects of 400 years of oppression.
Sure.
And, you know, the things that we've seen and been through. I'm not dismissing any of that. But if we cut it all off and we started with a year ago, we are still being victimized by the stuff you have to see on TV. You have African-American boys who at the age of 11 or 12, all they have ever seen were African-American boys being killed on TV.
Mm-hmm.
That's all they've ever seen. They've not known the life without it because they've watched this happen since they've been old enough to understand.
Mm-hmm.
They are victims. You can go into a grocery store. You can go into an amusement park. You can go anywhere and be mistreated, and you'll be a victim today. We're not talking about the victimization only of the yesteryears. You can be a victim tomorrow. And I think if we're all honest, we have been in places where you have been the victim.
That's right.
You were
of
either
course.
Wrongly accused or wrongly criticized or maybe let's not even make it a negative thing. Looked over for a job unjustly. it's happening. So there's a rationale to the relevancy of still being victimized.
Yeah.
Yeah, and like I was, to her point, it's not even like this is ancient history. We're talking about 1960s, 1970s, like the Civil Rights Act was just passed halfway through the 20th century. Like, it's not even hundreds of years ago. Like, there are people alive still, like, you know what I mean, who went through segregation that are still alive. Like, it's not even,
of course.
You know what I mean? It's not even ancient history. So I can never agree that the responsibility is on us to fix the mistakes of others. I could never agree with that. I just can't.
And it doesn't take away, you know, something that I said on the back end of my last answer. At some point, as a family, as a community, you can gather the people you love and say, let's get us out of
this.
Correct.
And then you could say, well, we're no longer playing the victim. We took pride and took our own responsibility. And then you can build all that up, and tomorrow you can go somewhere and still be disrespected.
To that point, in my initial answer to you, I said I'm not making an excuse for stagnation.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's not no excuse to be stagnant.
Yeah.
It's not no excuse to not grind and hustle and get out here and get it. But even if his question is about us as a race and as a culture,
mm-hmm.
and if I get my family together and pull my family up, that's my family.
Exactly.
You feel me?
That's right.
That's not balancing the scales.
That's right.
You know
and
what I'm
it's,
saying?
It's very interesting. Your point is very, very interesting because I could be an extremely successful black man in today's America and still go somewhere tomorrow and be looked down upon
because of
what I look like.
Yeah.
So I was going to ask you, because I remember like Booker T. Washington in like the 1890s to kind of offset the Jim Crow laws. He was
not
like,
saying
hey,
I'm that old, right? I'm not trying to give me some
you remember
him,
right?
Yeah. I didn't go. Make sure you know I didn't go fool. All right, brother. I'm the historian.
He said basically.
Is my gray showing that much, though, for real?
No, I was going to ask you this. So you said basically to offset the Jim Crow laws that were put in place, we had to educate and be entrepreneurs. And you two have both done that.
Yeah.
So I'd like to hear your experience because this is, what, 130 years later from him saying, hey, we need to mobilize on our own, get education, and be entrepreneurs. And that would create our own system of wealth. But I mean, you're only, like you say, you're only one person. It's hard to pull up a whole group.
Of course.
So I kind of like to hear y'all's experience as being entrepreneurs.
You can talk many
options. I was going to let you go first.
Simone owns her own shop, too, so I'd love to hear your thoughts.
Oh, okay.
I'm taking it in.
I'm sorry.
I'm listening right now.
Well, like I said, I was kind of raised in an entrepreneurial family, right? I was always taught, don't work. I'll just be honest, my father, don't work for the white man. That was it, right? You get education, anything you can take, put it towards your own business. Put your own 2 feet on the ground. Save your money. You know, get a hustle. You know, he's showing me all these things to do. So it was always in my mind that I had to work for myself. The only way I'm going to come up is to work for myself. So I was never trained to, you know, you're going to get a great education, then you're going to go get a great job, and then you're going to be successful, then you're going to raise a family. No, it was out, go get your own brand, raise your family, give your brand to your family, let them continue that generational wealth. So that's the way I was taught, and that's the way I got to keep it moving.
So give me, rephrase the question that you had specifically.
Basically, what I was saying is Booker T. Washington said to offset any type of segregation or discrimination or from playing the victim, we need to educate and be entrepreneurs.
Mm-hmm.
Has that experience kind of helped you push through, and have you been able to bring others up because of your entrepreneurship?
Okay, so thank you for that question. I definitely believe that entrepreneurship is freedom.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's ultimate freedom. I was writing down a thought just yesterday as I was flying through Chicago that one sign of enslavement is a name change. That when people say that you're something that you're not. So if I was to like go and address the same idea with biblical characters, we could look at Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego.
Mm-hmm.
That was not their name.
Yes.
It was their name that they were given in enslavement. And I can just imagine how they were in a room together, and you know, one of them yelled, "Hey, Shadrach, dude, that is not my name. I'm Toby." you know what I'm saying? Yeah. And still like we have a responsibility to know who we are.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
We have a responsibility to do our due diligence to make our name great. That somebody can walk around and call you a liar. Is that who you are?
Yeah.
That's not who you are. Somebody can walk around and call you a thief. Is that who you are? That's the name that the enslavement has given you, right? And so I think that the only way that we can exercise true freedom is in ownership of our stuff, of ourselves, of our actions, of the things that we create, that we can be makers. I think that this is the time for all hustlers to unite, you know, that we all can make whatever we want to be a part of. We no longer have to sit back and say, oh, it's because of what you did to me. Listen, I was molested as a child. So if we want to go back and talk about victimization of the things that people have done to us, we can do that. Or we can rise above it and we can say, well, this is who I am now. This is what I'm going to do. When I started my business, I could not bake, not even out of a box. I didn't have any money. I didn't have any credit. I didn't have any experience in the business. Nobody was going to give me a loan for anything. I was losing the house that the very bakery exists in right now, 11 years later. Because when you put your mind, this is what I was saying earlier, we can be focused on what happened for us instead of what has happened to us. I believe that it is that blood running through my veins that had things taken from her. You know, it is that blood running through my veins that said, no, you can't come in here. It's that blood that is running through my veins that made my great-grandfather one of the first to be able to do, to sing where he sang. And those are the things that I'm using today to get me from where I am to where it is that I want to be. And it's those things that I'm giving to my children and saying, this is what you have. We're not talking about what we're not. We're talking about what we are.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's the difference.
Mm-hmm. And when we talk about what what we are. What are we doing right as a culture that's setting up our children to have wealth? What are we doing right as a culture to where our children's children will know our names? Are we doing things right as a culture to change the narrative of our finances, of our children?
I can only answer that as an individual and then see what we and my wife also try to do and spread, right? You know, we're all about giving back. We're all about showing and proving. You know, I want to be that beacon that this young brother say, you know what? I want to do what he's doing. You know what I'm saying? I want to go out and get my own wealth. I want to start my own business. And if I wasn't there, maybe he didn't see me. Maybe they never came to my restaurant. Maybe it's just me, you know. But when you're there, we're going to teach you. We're going to give you tools. We're going to teach you about customer service. We're going to teach you how to run a restaurant because that's what we have to do. It's my duty. I have to teach. And again, I can only speak about me. I can't save the world. Yeah. I can save the people that watch me. I can save the people that touch me. I can save the people that work for me. I do my best, right? You know, so, you know, I just look at it as you have to be that beacon, right? You got to be that shining light to change everything around you. You know, be that leading example.
But I don't think that's anything new under the sun, what you're saying.
No, it's not new.
I think that's what this community has been. You know, it has been a community of people who say, I'll teach you how to do this.
What community are you talking about?
The Black community. I have plenty of examples in my life of people who stuck their foot in the door so that I could pass through.
That's not always out the way we do things, though. You know.
What's good, everybody? It's your boy, O'Shea.
Black America is potentially the most dangerous group of humans alive today. Dangerous to who? Dangerous to the corporate empire, Illuminati, imperial scum, whatever you want to call them. White supremacists.
White supremacy is the problem. You just happen to be white.
How much of the problems in the Black community are the Blacks' own fault?
Well, white supremacy is the main problem in our community. If we resolve white supremacy, we will resolve the problems of unemployment. We will resolve the problems of bad housing. The Reagan administration probably represented the epitome of white supremacy by cutting into every domestic livable program that whites and blacks had, especially poor people, and they showed their relationship with these people by proving their insensitivity.
Well, Mr. Cook.
And the reason they're dangerous is because they're quite easily united. It might seem not true because there's so much division within black people in America, but the only reason they're divided is because the corporate empire spends billions of dollars keeping them divided because they are potentially dangerous.
Mr. Coakley, you've attacked Jesse Jackson, you attacked the late Mayor Harold Washington, you called them colorless. What black leaders, political leaders in this country do you respect?
Well, I think politics has a way of accommodation. I don't think we have true political leaders in the sense of that you're going to find purity in politics. Politics is about accommodation and compromise. When our black leaders go into politics, as was discussed recently in Harper's Magazine, blacks have to prove to whites that they will protect their interests first. That's why politics is not the type of game that we're going to continue to invest all our time in, because it's proven that it doesn't work. Politics will not whip white supremacy, but clear, accurate, documented challenges to white supremacy, as well as action, grassroots action, taken against the forces of white supremacy.
What makes them dangerous? Well, 45 million people united in the U.S. would be very dangerous. What kind of things is dangerous? Well, you might think I'm talking about protesting or getting together and rallying and that kind of stuff. Well, no, that's not the kind of danger I'm talking about. 45 million people united could do some serious damage to the financial market. Serious damage to the financial market. Serious damage to the financial market.
So I'm dark skinned with an accent, and when you had an accent back then, Africans, well, it wasn't that many Africans in America then. It was mostly Jamaican. So you had an accent, you're automatically Jamaican.
Right.
Africans, well, it wasn't that many Africans in America then. It was mostly Jamaican.
You have to be logical. If I know in this hotel room they have food every day, and I'm knocked on the door every day to eat, and they tell, and they open the door, let me see the flowing food around, where they're telling me there's no food in here every day. I'm standing outside trying to sing my way in. We are hungry, please let us in. We are hungry, please let us in. After about a week, that song is going to change. That we hungry, we need some food. After 2-3 weeks, it's like, give me all the food, ragging out the door. After years, and he's just like, I'm picking the lock, coming through the door, blasting. We asked 10 years ago. We was asking with the Panthers. We was asking with that, you know, the civil rights movement. We was asking. You know, now those people that were asking, they're all dead and in jail. So now what do you think we're going to do?
What that was all about, the revolution will not be televised. That was about the fact that the first change that takes place is in your mind. You have to change your mind before you change the way you live and the way you move. So when we said that the revolution will not be televised, we were saying that, like, the thing that's going to change people is something that no one will ever be able to capture on film. It'll just be something that you see, and all of a sudden you realize, I'm on the wrong page, or I'm on the right page, but I'm on the wrong note. And I've got to get in sync with everyone else to understand what's happening in this country.
To watch all of my exclusive content not featured here on my channel, log on to my website at imjustheretomakeyouthink.com/fumes. In today's society of America, millions of people of all complexions are still undergoing the effects of a variety of dominant social engineering experiments, which just so happens to play a prominent role among their everyday lives unknowingly. Not only that, there are in fact particular prominent groups of people that have set the mandatory rules and regulations that all American citizens must abide by. Still to this very day, and when it specifically comes to the so-called African Americans, or rather the descendants of the copper-colored indigenous people who occupied all of the now American lands pre-colonial times, the experimental methodologies are deeply rooted, especially physically and mentally, by way of things such as industrialism, environmental racism, compulsory education, manipulative indoctrination, paper genocide, and eugenics. However, I would like for you to note that the freedom of having life is like a seed. It cannot grow on its own and become a plant unless the climate changes environmentally. Now, many of you can recall hearing the phrase, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. And I agree with it to a certain extent, because even though you may be doing great right now, you should always make room for improvements, or rather changes, because it's better to be prepared than repaired after the damage is already done. Which brings me to my very first point of this segment, and that is, why are people of color in America considered to be the biggest threat throughout American society? Now, this question alone would be continuously answered throughout this video and my other correlating documentaries, because of how much detailed information is critically important to note when answering this question. This era can be traced all the way back to the late 1700s and very early 1800s, at a time when white African and European colonizationalists, or rather kidnappers, were afraid of the threat of being murdered by the so-called coloreds, or rather the indigenous people of North America, due to the multiple Indian raids, rebellions, documented and undocumented wars rapidly occurring during this time period. This is also the very same time period where these kidnappers demanded that the Negroes be removed from the lands of America and shipped away to newly established American colonized lands in Africa along the coast. Multiple religious societies campaigned for this idea to become a reality, especially the Catholics and the Quakers, just to name a few. But the ball began to roll once John Lynch wrote a letter to the president. According to records held by the National Archives, in a letter to then former President Thomas Jefferson, dated December 25, 1810, John Lynch, who colonized lands he named after himself called Lynchburg, Virginia, made a descriptive proposition to Thomas Jefferson that called for the, quote, colonization of the Nigger people on the coast of Africa so that a settlement can be established for immigrating the freed people of color out of North America and into Africa somewhere along the coast. In my documentary called African American Slaves in West Africa, History Books Are Lying, Part 2, I shared much detailed informative information in relation to what really happened in American history. I exposed that we were all led to believe that our ancestors were stolen from parts of West Africa and then shipped to the Americas, when in reality, that information was told to us all in reverse. Some of our ancestors were forcefully relocated from southern east lands of North America to lands west of the Mississippi River, and also along the coast of Africa, and especially South and West Africa. I highly recommend that you watch that video, for it is critically important for the sake of our real documented history. Now, another side of this era would be allowing the people of color to think freely, being as though English was not our ancestors' original language to begin with. The early European and African colonizationalists implemented manipulative methods to force their own traditions, language, and cultures, just to name a few, upon our ancestors mentally, which in turn rapidly obstructed our ancestors' well-being physically, systematically. This method was also purposely designed to decimate their literacy and critical thinking capabilities, along with quelling the thoughts of retaliation by fear-mongering, allowing for this social engineering format of eugenics to prevail from generation to generation, affecting only those who are forcefully under the spell of its digested forms of slavery, or rather oppression, under the mysterious provisions and racist ideologies of white supremacy.
So I asked my students, okay, what happened during Reconstruction right after the Civil War? What went on there? And what happened to me was an aha reaction, or I might better call it an oh no reaction, because 16 out of my 17 students said to me, that's the time when, right after the Civil War, Reconstruction, blacks took over the government of the southern states, but they were too soon out of slavery, and so they screwed up, and white folks had to take control again.
Birth of a Nation, the 1903 movie.
Birth of a Nation, Gone with the Wind, all rolled into one. And, of course, these are all African-American students. I thought, my gosh, what must it do to you to believe that the one time your group was center stage in American history, they screwed up? Now, it'd be a different matter if this happened, but it didn't happen. This is, in fact, what we in sociology call BS history. That is bad sociology. BS history. That is bad sociology. They started the public school systems for both races. There were scattered schools for white folks, but no system that included the whole state. And of course, there were no schools at all for black folks. It was illegal, a felony, to teach even free blacks to read and write. So they didn't screw up. So anyway, I went to nearby schools. I watched
This was just before massive school desegregation, so I watched black teachers teaching all black classes this white supremacist history that was complete BS, because they were just teaching what was in the book.
In my documentary called The Duplicity of the Public School System, I shared much detailed informative information about the pseudoscientific methods utilized by way of college professors, anthropologists, sociologists, and many other correlating co-conspirators in order to teach all people of color, along with non-elite white people, about white supremacy-filled U.S. history, world history, and so-called African-American studies in history, even though there were in fact very few of these scholars that were adamantly opposed to such teachings.
And what, may I ask, is an Aryan? I don't know myself. But let us see what our present so-called authorities have to say about him. They say he is tall, slender, blue-eyed, and blonde. There is no Aryan race. And more important, there is no master race. There are people who may find these ideas convenient, but science cannot support them. There is no scientific proof that there's any correlation between a man's racial characteristics and his native ability or character. In all racial groups, we find the same range of potentialities. We find idiots and geniuses. We find criminals and philanthropists. We must judge each man as an individual and not by the color of his skin or his eyes or by the length of his nose. Come in, gentlemen. It's comfortable. And remember that there is no master race. That is a scientific truth. Anyone who tells you otherwise is lying.
Even during the times when the existence of federal laws prevented people of color to learn anything dealing with these foreigners' ambitions, agendas, and even their own propaganda, one must not forget about the year of 1776, when a new sheriff pinned his shiny badge to his chest and a code of conduct was created and implemented into the so-called laws of the lands. I'll be sharing more details about that in a later planned documentary. Now, the next part of this threat is also very noteworthy and critically important to the descendants of the indigenous Aboriginal Niji of this land, Turtle Island, now known as the Americas. Many of you can recall the American Holocaust of 1921, when the U.S. and federal government ordered the bombing of so-called Negro residents and businesses in the Greenwood District of Tulsa, Oklahoma, murdering thousands of people of color and destroying hundreds of their own very prosperous businesses by way of U.S. Army planes, literally dropping bomb after bomb throughout the Greenwood District by way of an executive order called Martial Law, in which this specific order was created by Congress and President Woodrow Wilson of the Democratic Party before leaving office in March of 1921, and then immediately approved and implemented into law by then President Warren Harding of the Republican Party in May of 1921, just a few days prior to inflicting a deadly Holocaust upon its own American citizens. Now, I originally named my documentary about this The American Holocaust of 1921, and after the documentary accumulated 60,000 views in 4 hours, YouTube removed the video. However, after nearly a month of back and forth, It was placed back on my channel, and it is now called The History of the Negro Wall Street, the unforgettable horrific event of 1921. That is a documentary that I highly recommend for all people to watch. Now, I said all of that to say this. There is a reason why the famous influential activist named Frederick Douglass was able to contribute, quote, tens of thousands of dollars of his own money in order to save the abolishment of all 37 branches of the Freedmen Savings and Trust Banks that were created by law through then President Abraham Lincoln on March 3, 1865. And before I state that reason, I want you to note the timeline here. The Civil War began on April 12, 1861, in which history states that the war occurred allegedly due to disagreements between politicians of the North, or rather the Union, and the politicians of the South, or rather the Confederate States, over the abolishment of slavery. However, the truth is that the Civil War was actually about integrating the free enterprise system with more of the indigenous aboriginals of the American lands, being as though many of our ancestors during this time period were not slaves, but rather indentured servants, who were literally sharecroppers that owned farms, banks, and other institutions of business, which in turn allowed both heads of the same snake to acknowledge the fact that our ancestors were rising up as capitalists within this industrialized society. In other words, the Union recognized that the so-called Negroes in the North and the South were rapidly prospering tremendously economically, and they wanted to go into business with them to further their expertise in the free enterprise system. But most politicians of the South disagreed with this notion, being as though it single-handedly threatened the longevity of their not-so-prosperous small to medium-sized businesses. So the Civil War began in April 1861 and completed in May of 1865. Before the Civil War ended, some very important key factors occurred within this timeline. For example,
see, that manipulative lie was told to you as a fear-mongering tactic in order to depict that one race of people are somehow superior to others. When King stated that through an act of Congress, the government was giving away millions of acres of land, he was referring to the Homestead Act of 1862, in which just a little over 30 years prior to this law, our ancestors' cultures, heritage, history, identities, resources, and lands were stripped away and became possessions of the federal government, in order to be distributed to the, quote, free whites that immigrated to America from Africa and Europe during the early 1800s.
Which meant that it was willing to undergird its white peasants from Europe with an economic floor. Which meant that it was willing to undergird its white peasants from Europe with an economic floor.
The Homestead Act of 1862 granted these white peasants, as King describes, our lands that were stripped from our indigenous ancestors and all of the specialized benefits the federal government promised our ancestors by peace treaties that they would receive for being 90% of the help they needed in order for the United States to win all 61 documented wars that occurred during the 1800s alone. Side note, the Emancipation Proclamation abolished all forms of slavery the very next year in 1863. The so-called free Negroes and the so-called freed Negroes, along with the so-called freedmen, were royally upset and disgusted with the federal government. So they continued the multiple rebellions until they saw change. The Homestead Act of 1866 was established by the government that allowed the Negro 40 acres and a mule. But the catch was that the Negro had to buy the land, and the price of the lands were lowered just enough so that the Negro cannot afford it still. This is what King meant by America refused to give the Negro any land. These homestead acts gave these foreigners government-funded assistance, where the government hired our ancestors to teach these foreigners how to farm.
Not only did they give the land, they built land-grant colleges with government money to teach them how to farm. With government money to teach them how to farm.
Because keep in mind, a true foreigner or immigrant wouldn't know how to grow anything in a mass area of land that they are not accustomed with or never inhabited before in their life. This is why King stated our farms.
They provided low interest rates in order that they could mechanize their farms. In order that they could mechanize their farms.
Okay, so now, this timeline that I'm referring to begins with the Civil War in April 1861. Then, the first official Homestead Act of 1862. Then, the very next year, the Emancipation Proclamation Bill was implemented into law in 1863, in which that bill alone had absolutely nothing to do with freeing slaves from chains and shackles, like how history so loves to claim. No. In fact, the word emancipate derives from the Latin word emancipatus, which is the process of being set free from legal, social, or political restrictions, which has nothing to do with enslavement. In fact, the Latin word for civil is civilis, which means to affect fellow citizens in a legal or political sense. In other words, the stories of slavery in the Americas did not happen the way we were originally taught by authors of American history and world history. Because once an individual literally researches their family's genealogical background by records, instead of taking the word from some self-proclaimed scholars within their own communities with absolutely no publicly verifiable evidence to manifest, they will be met with the truth that these so-called slaves in America were actually...
Okay, today's podcast is titled Victimhood. Is it a mental illness or is it a cult? And the I'm just the messenger here. Okay. I'm not endorsing victimhood, but somebody brought up a title yesterday. So, you know, is victimhood a mental illness or is it a cult or is everybody else crazy? All right. So I was letting the last audio that I just played, that guy's he's giving his take on what he's giving his take on. Before that, the first audio was sort of a mixed bag. Some people believe that they're victims. Others don't. So the question of the day is victimhood or victimization, is it a legitimate mental illness or is it a cult? Now, I'm going to play this, so hold it if I got it here. This one last audio where the person, well, you'll hear what he says. I cherry pick on this audio. It's an audio that talks about house building, which I think is very relevant. However, he gives it from a historical victimhood point of view.
Because I used to observe that a lot of those shacks used to be by the track where black people were.
With the room in the back.
Yes, with the room in the back. That was a safety net.
Yeah.
Where black people who would move here and there and go from here and there looking for jobs, that's usually why we move, then the jobs would play out like they always did.
And do. And,
but we had a place to go when the sun went down. But now, those shacks by the track don't exist anymore. They came and built highways right alongside of those railroad tracks where those shacks used to be. Super highways. So now, if you get on a highway, you might notice that if you, sometimes you are right alongside of a railroad track. You see a train's passing
that
as you're driving.
That is true.
Down a superhighway.
Mm-hmm.
Well, see, those highways used not to be there in the northwestern hemisphere. It used to be shacks along there. A lot of those shacks were on what we call railroad property. But the railroad people, the people that ran the railroads, didn't care much because nobody wanted to be down. That wasn't prime real estate.
No.
Nobody wanted to be by the tracks anyway. So black people used to build those shacks around there back when black people knew how to build shacks. Black people don't know how to build anything now because they used to build places for white people, but they cut them off with things called unions, took them out, took the carpentry all out of the schools and all like that. So how many black people do you know that know how to fix anything now? It used to be thousands and millions of black people that know how to build a house from scratch out of old pieces of lumber.
Wow.
A lot of people don't remember that. Most people are not that old to have seen it done. I'm old enough to remember when many black people used to get together on a Saturday afternoon. That was the only time they had off, or sometimes, or on a Sunday sometimes after church. They would get together, six or eight of them, and go down and build what they call a shotgun house. It wasn't much, but it was a roof over your head, a good solid roof. I've been in some of those houses, raised up in some, all right? They were excellent, solid houses. They could stand a lot of storm and rain. They weren't much, just maybe three rooms. But I've been in some of them, and there were many, 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 many of them. But along came the white supremacists and say, these Negroes know how to build stuff. We're going to fix that so the next generation won't know how to do anything except stand in front of a place that is built and big, because they won't know anything about carpentry or masonry or how to make anything with their hands.
So, second question of the day. Is Neely Fuller, and he's still alive and kicking, and he's on somebody's podcast. I used to have his phone number, that about three or four phones ago. But I'd like to get him on here. But in any event, is Neely Fuller, in my opinion, or no, I'll give you my opinion in a moment, but he believes in white supremacy, so is believing in white supremacy a mental illness? Ados, African descendants of slaves, is that a political movement or a cult? Anyway, victimhood, is it a mental illness, a form of mental illness, or a cult some kind of way? Because let's take somebody, they're 15 and 20-year-olds here in the United States, born and raised, matter of fact, let's even go higher. They're, you know what, my aunt, at one of my mother's sisters, passed away about 3 years ago at 105. Now, I never heard her talk about white supremacy. Never heard her talk about the white man. I never heard her talk about the white man's holding me back. And she lived, she was 105 years old, and she passed away 3 years ago. So I'm just wondering how somebody who's 15 or 20 years old who has an internet connection, a smartphone, a tablet, a laptop, all the latest electronics, how that person feels that they deserve reparations and they believe in white supremacy. I haven't figured that out. So that's one of the reasons why I have this podcast, because people in the audience might be able to straighten me up. In any event, 407, is victimhood a mental illness or a cult or something else?
Good morning, L.A. Oh, afternoon, it's 12. This is Beata with Female Solution, Blog Talk Radio, and Soul Purpose Healing. And I would say the answer to your question is complex. I don't think it's a yes or a no, because if it's a mental illness, yes, because it's from years and years of programming by the establishment to bring about an agenda, like you said, to deprive a certain group of people of the skills to build houses. You know, my grandfather built his own house, and as a child, I spent many summers in southern Illinois in his house that he built. Very simple house, but it kept us, you know, from the element of the rain. And he had a farm. We had the best eggs. The eggs were like so off the chain. I'm still trying to find eggs that taste
well,
like that.
Anyway, that doesn't sound like victimhood to me.
Not self-sufficient. And my grandparents on my mother's side were Native American heritage. They were not African, believe me, because they were not of a dark, very dark skin, but they had those features, long nose, and many of them had more straight hair than nappy hair. So their heritage, my mother's side of the family, was Native American. Like the audio you played, he's so right about the twisted history that everybody came from Africa who has curly hair and dark skin. So we've got a lot of correcting to do because, I mean, I've come full circle. I'm living in a shed, basically, that was built by someone who owned this property that my son bought. And this shed has been there 20 years, and I just took it upon myself to renovate it and live in it, 320 square feet. So I'm feeling very much at peace and purpose to teach this next generation the value of building your own, renovating your own, teaching our next generation how to build houses. He's so right. We've lost that art, that gift. So the solution
now,
is
hold it.
Next generation.
Was it the white man's fault we lost it? Because that would be victimhood.
No, it wasn't anybody's fault other than the universal karmic. I'd say it was the karmic energy that allowed the consequences and choices for people to experience their consequences of choices they made, choices to go to big cities and leave the farm, choices to not concentrate on helping the next generation to learn how to build things. You know, we're living in times of consequences, not victimhood. Everybody made a choice. My father left New Orleans, Jim Crow South, to come to Chicago and with his mother and experience what they thought was a better life, but really the cold of Chicago and being on welfare was just a different life. So it wasn't necessarily better, but
I believe a lot
different.
Of people moved up to, Illinois, Indiana, the Rust Belt, Wisconsin, the Great Migration, as they call it, the Great Migration 1.
Yeah.
A lot
yeah.
of them moved because of, I'll give an example. I had a cousin, he's passed over now, but he was originally from Arkansas, I think Pine Bluff, Arkansas. So he told me that, people would come, some of the blacks that left Arkansas, Mississippi, Alabama, those states, in the South, would come up, came up north and they got jobs or whatever. So it seemed like on the regular, a lot of these people who had gone up north for a better life would make trips back to, in this case, Pine Bluff, Arkansas, and I guess throughout the South. And they would come back, with a car and a trinkets and nice clothes and whatever else. And it's like, for people in Pine Bluff and other places in the South, it was like places like Chicago, because Pleasant Stephens is originally from Arkansas. So it was like going north was like the promised land. So
right.
You had a lot of people that, a lot of people got jobs that probably didn't even have a high school diploma back in those
right.
days.
Right, especially musicians. You know, Louis Armstrong was one of the leaders of the Great Migration in terms of musicians, because my dad knew someone. I think his mother's sister was dating Louis Armstrong. There was some connection there. But Louis Armstrong went north, and then a lot of other people went north following him from New Orleans, and guess what? They established a musical community that was just thriving
Motown.
From New York and Chicago.
Yeah, Motown, too, because if you look at a lot of the backgrounds, Motown in its heyday, you know, a lot of the famous artists on a Motown label back, you know, during the Marvin Gaye days, the Temptations and Shorty Long and all those people, a lot of those people were from the Deep South.
Right,
matter of fact,
right.
The Staples singers, Pop Staples, is originally from, like, Mississippi. There's a whole bunch of musicians, like you say, that came up from the South. But now you didn't hear any of them talk about, and I'm sure they saw segregation and this, that, or the other. But what's scary to me is the 20-year-old today that is, they feel that the white man's holding them back. Anyway, for the youngins, is it a mental illness? Because some people really believe that there are powers outside of them that are holding them back. And of course, we'd have to define what's holding somebody back.
So L.A., in terms of whether victimhood is a mental illness, it kind of is, because not being a victim is a mature spiritual attitude, in my opinion, that is focused on karma and learning life lessons. So that's the people who are not in the victim mode. We're mature spiritually. We've learned about karma, and we have had ancestors who succeeded in spite of the evil of men of different color, whatever. So it kind of is a mental illness, but it was brought about, in my opinion, by the programming and the choices that we made to think that we didn't have any power. We gave away our sovereignty. And so then it was like, oh, poor me. Look what's happening to me. But you gave it away by making certain choices. So, yeah, it's kind of a mental illness, but it's also as a result of choices that people made along the way, and then they don't want to take self-responsibility now. You know, it's easier to be a victim than to be responsible for the choices you and your ancestors made in the past. But that's a hard lesson, because my view is we all get what we deserve. I don't care what it is. We all get what we deserve, because there's a universal law called karma. That's the way I look at life, and I have so much peace and joy keeping that attitude, and then prosperity comes when you take self-responsibility.
Yeah. Well, it's a mixed bag out there. It's because, not all black people are alike.
It's people in general. It's not just black people that are in victimhood. There's a whole bunch of other colors.
You can find everybody under the spectrum. Color spectrum. There's victims.
So it's not, this mental illness is not racial or racism. It's just a human condition based on the society that we have chosen to live in. I bet you farmers in the South who never left, they ain't thinking they victims. They got land. They got food. And those people in the urban areas are struggling, are starting to get in the victim. Oh, they're taking away my baby food. Oh, they're taking away this. Oh, they're taking, we're just victims. We're government. Uncle Sam, please help us. There's the height of victimhood is help me, Uncle Sam. Well, Uncle Sam then is the main one who put you in the position you're in. You allowed that by submitting to this evil authority in many ways. Their agenda is so evil now coming out. We got monkeypox now. Oh, you got everybody, people going to be a victim of monkeypox now. Really? We've been here before. Here we go again. So if you're not waking up to the buffoonery and craziness of monkeypox at this point, then you're going to be another victim and maybe in the grave pretty soon. So we got to just wake up, take our sovereignty back, stop complying with government rules and regulations and start putting our foot down and saying, no, we ain't taking this bullshit anymore. Sorry.
Well, in that case, you might have to go to another location.
You go in your city. Yeah, within your city, yeah. But there are always, to me, from my journey in the area I live in, there's always little oases around your area. You just got to move away from the city. You ain't going to find a lot of freedom in the city. You got to move away. And people don't want to do that. It's like change has got to come. Everything must change. Some people don't like that, so they're suffering.
Okay, well. Now, what about the people that are in Ukraine? What are they?
That is,
Victims, or what?
So, okay, those people are...
the Russians felt they were victims.
The people in Ukraine are a consequence of allowing the United States mafia to move into your country and set up laboratories and make money. The people in Ukraine, including Zelensky, the prime minister, they're all the result of crookedness, evil taking over instead of controlling your country on a more moral ground instead of a corrupt ground. Because the Ukrainian government and the United States government been in bed together for many, many years since President Brandon was in with Obama. They've been having all kind of crooked things going on in Ukraine. So that's why Russia is at war with the United States right now. But don't even just erase Ukraine and put United States, because that's who's influencing the government of Ukraine right now, is the corrupt government of the United States. That's what's going on. And people are like, oh, we got to pray for Ukraine. Well, this is the result of allowing crookedness like the United States and other countries to come in there and take over your country. So, I pray for them, but I pray for Russian people as much as Ukraine people. I'm not siding with Ukraine. That's not the issue at all. Our government is at fault in Ukraine, setting up laboratories, making all that money. Let's not be fooled, people. Wake up, wake up.
Okay, well, any advice for younger people who might have a victim, or can a victimhood mindset be reversed?
Of course it can. Self-responsibility. That's the first step. Take responsibility for everything that's gone on in your life now. No more blaming, blame, that the Democrats really, and racism. Let's take responsibility for every choice you've made and then start correcting the educational system that you've been under, like going back to mechanics, building things, learning how to build a house, learning how to fix cars, learning how to take self-responsibility and independence. That's where we got to get back to educating this next generation. Coming out of work, I got to work for some corporation, figure out what you can do and become your own entrepreneur or your own boss and correct the wrongs of this last generation.
Okay, well, and this, what's today? Today's Tuesday. Tomorrow's the first. Friday, you have what? On the
Health and Well-Being. Health and Well-Being. With Viata on the Female Solution. And I have some. I've been having. If you want to be a guest on this show, if you have any goals or the mind to build a new healthcare system, give me a call, because that's what we're teaching on health and well-being, is how to build a new healthcare system, which means getting out of the sick care system and big pharma mafia. It's nothing but a mafia going on with the pharmaceutical company. They are taking people out, literally killing people if they don't go along with their plan. Okay, let me give an example. This incident in Buffalo, where they all these people got killed, it's really coming out, and I think you've gotten information, L.A., about the security guard was building a system to run cars on water. He had a patent on it, working on it, and all of a sudden there's a mass shooting in Buffalo, and he's the main target, but they just got a few other people probably to make
it
look like.
Well, that's what some say, he was the main target.
Well, there's all kind of, yeah, go on the Internet. It's all around. If you have Telegram, you'll get lots of information. You won't get it on mainstream media, that's for sure. But the big pharma and the oil companies, they all have something to do with taking people out like that, because they're not making any money. And what you get out of big pharma is side effects of death. And oil companies are involved just as much of taking people out who don't agree with their agenda, their profit plan, and all that. So,
now, you know there are other people before him that have done the same thing.
Yeah, they've been dead. They're dead, too. They've been taken.
No, there's a lot of them that are living now.
Some of them are living, probably shut them up in some way. But there's still a lot of people who got taken out, especially in the healthcare industry, in the alternative health industry. A lot of people were killed promoting something other than big pharma mafia. There you have it. I'm protected. I'm not worried. I'm protected. So I'm going to teach till the day my assignment is over that this is not the way to go with big pharma and the sick care system that the last 2 years has really revealed itself to us. Unless you had your head in the sand, you should be aware now. The last 2 years was all about fear mongering, profiting, helping big pharma profit with their vaccines. Oh my goodness, we really learned a lot. So we can be grateful. Those people who had to go to the grave as a result of the fear and the sickness and all that. We bless their ancestors. We bless their families and all that. But 2 years of Twilight Zone in the COVID fear mongering should have taught everybody a lesson about getting out of the sick care system. Because now we got monkeypox coming up. Talk about victims. Yeah, you're going to be a victim of a monkeypox. They had a simulation a year ago. For those of you who don't know. Simulation that Bill Gates and some other people were involved to see what would happen with a monkeypox pandemic. And guess what? They got vaccines in the pipeline. Anybody who falls for this one, have mercy on you. You need to have result. Whatever happens to you is going to happen if you fall for the monkeypox show. This is a repeat of what we just went through. If you weren't awoke in the last one, then shame on you. Sorry. They're going to keep coming at us because the goal is 50% reduction in the population. I just got a word.
Now, why would they want a 50% reduction in the population?
Control people better when there's fewer of us. They can't control as many people right now. So they reduce the population. That's the thinking of people like Bill Gates, Fauci, and all them. They can control more people if there's less of them. That's just one theory. You can probably find others. Come up with your own. But it's true because they did a good job the last 2 years getting rid of quite a few. They claim that, a million people died from COVID? Nah, it wasn't that at all. Maybe the flu and fear, but they didn't die from no COVID. That was a sham. That was all a lie. We keep reading, and then take responsibility. That's what we have to do. That's the solution. Self-responsibility. Let's re-educate this next generation. Don't let them fall for the bullshit anymore from the pharmaceuticals, from this crooked government. We got to stop this with this next generation.
And there's not too many people on the planet, really. Right. Take everybody on the planet and stick them all 50%. In the state of Texas.
Yeah, 50%. They're gonna. They. I guess their goal. That's their goal. Cloud Schwash, whatever Schwab, whatever his name is. He's in there. Bill Gates. All. Bill Gates admitted it. There's a. They may have taken this off right now, but Bill Gates admitted it on TED Talk that that was the goal. If they do a good job on vaccinations, they'll reduce the population. Now think about that. What does that mean? You're gonna. And that's what we've had for the last 2 years. Fear-mongering to get everybody to think problem, reaction, solution method of operation brought into action. Problem, we have a scary virus called corona that went to COVID, and then the reaction was a lot of fear and, oh, we got to do something. And then the solution, oh, the vaccine, the savior is here, the vaccine is here. So, yeah, victim is a mental illness of sorts because we fall for the okie-dokie lies and fear. So
well,
I hope that helps. I've got to run, but thank
okay,
you for the show.
All
I was
right,
listening
well,
to the brother. We really do have to learn about our history of slavery because he's right. We got a reverse message on the slavery message. That we need to go back to school on that one for sure.
All right, 314, your mic is open. Is victimhood a mental illness or cult?
All above, L.A., all above. And there ain't going to be no cars running off of water.
You mean on a mass market?
What is combustible about water?
Man, I don't know. We were talking about hydrogen the other day, weren't we?
You know, all that stuff sounds good, man.
Mm-hmm.
That stuff sounds good, intriguing. What the heck is combustible about water?
All I know
no,
about
water.
No, water.
You go in the kitchen, get a glass of water, and pour in your tank, start your car up, and drive off.
Well, no, that
that's what people
that's not
envision.
Gonna happen with a gas engine. To my knowledge, you won't.
Is that victimhood a cult? That's plain stupidity.
If you
he
do
had
that,
that
yeah.
one skit where they bring up that 400 years, the 400 years, what the heck are they talking about? Huh? What are they talking about? What are they saying that such and such was denied this. Well, hell, they would deny where they came from. You don't think that Africans that was brought here wasn't used to rape, wasn't used to being beat? They the weakest of the weak. You know why? Because they got caught.
Yeah, you're right. Wars, a lot of them were prisoners of war.
They didn't have to be prisoner of war. They got caught, intrigued
well,
into it.
That's,
the walk from Burkina Faso all the way down to Accra, you pass through hundreds of villages. The people in the village didn't give a damn about them folks that was walking by down the road. They had some type of confinement on them, being escorted by two or three people. Here come 20 people being escorted by two or three.
You know, I think a lot of people's image of slavery here in the United States, if you go way back, would be image, and you're, well, before we get to your image, on the many series Roots, where what wasn't portrayed in that many series was
let me ask you
the reality that you just explained. They didn't put that part
let
in
me ask you
the miniseries.
You here in the United States, right?
Mm-hmm.
And supposedly you came here by way of what? Slavery?
Well, I was born here. I don't know about this other stuff.
Well, I'm talking about your lineage, right?
You know, all I know about mine is on my grandfather's side, I think his father was a white Frenchman. And then,
then you
there's
don't get
a Native
no
American tribe in Louisiana.
It's what I'm trying to get at.
Mm-hmm.
If slavery is the reason why I'm here today, I'm glad it happened. I am happy as hell it happened. And if that's what led for me to be here to enjoy this great land today, things I have been able to pass on, assets I've built, I'm happy as hell it happened. Would not you be?
I have no complaints.
I'm happy as hell it happened. Who wouldn't be? You know why you know that? Because if you go back and look today where supposedly these folks came from, you're not going to stay there long. You know where you're coming back to? Here.
Mm-hmm. And that does happen. Some people go to Africa, and it wasn't what they thought it would be, and they came back to the United States.
All the houses, the buildings there are built on what model? European model.
Oh, yeah, in the modern times. Unless you're
the same thing here. Ain't no houses there. Ain't no houses here in the early ages built on the model of a hut or a chalet, as they French call them. Black Wall Street, quote unquote. That Creek territory. The buildings was built on what model? They wasn't built on huts nor teepees.
No, they weren't.
So where did they learn to do that? And then if you say it's black, where did they get the money? It's like Harriet Tubman when she goes to Auburn, New York and buys all that land. Have orchards growing produce, owning big buildings. And when one burned down, they build another one that's of modern times. Where'd she get all that money from? You had another skit talking about people couldn't get credit. Where'd she get that money from? Couldn't get bank accounts. Where'd she get that money from? Not saying that didn't happen. Some was it normal practice? Do we even think anymore? Hmm?
Now, Harriet Tubman was an entrepreneur. They don't really talk about that aspect of her.
Where did she get the money from?
Didn't she have a boarding house?
Yeah, she had a big boarding house. It burnt down. She went and bought it. She didn't build it. She bought it. Then built a new one. Where did she get the money from? Did she have insurance, fire insurance? I thought they wouldn't sell black folks fire insurance.
She earned hers. She was a nurse also. She was multi-talented.
And the people talking about get your own and your own brand. Well, if you get your own brand, who you going to sell to? You just going to sell exclusively to black? Then that gets into the question. I thought blacks were so impoverished. Where are you going to get the money to spend for what your brand is? I mean, does that make good logical sense, the question? Shotgun houses? Shotgun houses were nothing but a shelter. Did it have running water? Nope. Did it have plumbing? Nope. Did it have electricity? Nope. Did it have central air, heating and air? Nope.
No, it didn't have any of those amenities.
Did it have foundations that were below the frost line? Nope. You had to have crawl spaces because they said when the whites came to kill them, they all climbed under the house. So it wasn't no foundation. It wasn't no basement.
Well,
see, when you really get into
shotgun
detail,
house, the way they described was basically to keep something to keep you out of the elements temporarily. Because you're right, for the most part,
it was absolutely just like bears crawl up into a cave to hibernate. They don't build no shelter outside. They crawl up into a contained space to hibernate. That's what they do. And you talk about white supremacy. What the hell is white supremacy?
I don't know.
How is it stopping you? Does it stop you? And how? I mean, it stop us. Well, who is the us and how is it stopping the us? Who is the they? And what the heck is the they? Where is it? Is the they got an email address, a physical house address, building address?
Oh, good questions.
Yeah, well, when you hear that, it sounds easy. Go with easy. And sometimes they put emphasis on the word. Like, you know that they stop.
Next time I hear that, I will ask the question, do you have an email address for they, telephone number for they, some type of social
physical
media
address?
Yeah, brick and mortar address, all over, yeah. We need to track down that.
White supremacy, what the heck is white supremacy? Supreme in what? If that's what you're talking about, really whites ain't all white. Some of them pink, some of them are 20. But what the heck is this supremacy? How does it stop you? I mean, how does it stop me? How did
That's
it?
True.
Maybe if we played some stories of...
Well, now, let's see. Martin Luther King, in one of those audios, Martin Luther King was putting out, in my opinion, some victimhood stuff. You know, they gave them this, they didn't give us that. And one quote, we've come to get our check.
Gave who?
Yeah, a whole lot of people that fought. All victimhood statements to me.
Yeah, but what was given? Land? Blacks got land when they sponsored Europeans to the country? 50 acres.
And they were landlords that anybody could have participated in.
That was the program. Well, the program, if you do this, if you fill up enough Eagle Stamp books, you can get, that's the program. And they participated in. Now, was there some ups and downs for people? Yes, whites had ups and downs. They still have them today, just like everybody else. Whites lost their lives. Whites lost their land. When they put the highway system in, white towns was neglected. All out along Route 66 out west. Some of those old cafes and restaurants still exist. But to get on them, you got to get off and do a roundabout way to get on the road route that used to be, no longer is. It was white town. You ever traveled that before? Route 66 comes through.
No, I haven't. But I want to, though.
It goes on up into Chicago. When you driving down Highway 55 to Chicago, you go past a lot of towns. That was all white. That's no longer because the highway system. You can't get out there no more.
Well,
I don't think I'm wrong about this. I think I'm pretty accurate. 400 years. What's 400 years?
Well, that number can be disputed too.
Yeah, what's 400 years? So, how will somebody stop? Some of those captives was one step out of being primitive. Depends on where you got them from. And whites didn't go into the interior capture nobody. Suppose you capture 200 or 300 people. How you gonna feed them? How you gonna watch them all?
Yeah, that's expensive.
And how you gonna know what you got? And how you gonna protect yourself from the unknown viruses, bacteria that your immune system not used to?
Right.
Do people think about what the heck they be hearing? That's a programming, an indoctrination, and that it continues to go on and on and on. It's not as much as it used to be because people are getting wise to that stuff. And it's not. Like people say blacks were here in the United States way before. Well, if that's the case, where in the hell was the cemetery? Did they die? You seen any cemeteries? If blacks couldn't be buried near whites, that mean they would have their own cemetery that even today, like down here in Louisiana, that they don't take care of. Whites have to come in there and cut the grass and put the tops back on the crypts. Or somebody don't went in and pull the teeth out of a dead corpse, the gold teeth.
That's sick.
You don't care about your living, you don't care about your dead. Now, if I'm not lying, Greenwood Cemetery in St. Louis, that was whites that recaptured that cemetery. Or blacks dump loads of trash in it because and debris that they don't want to go and pay the landfill. Ain't no white trucks coming out there dumping. There's black trucks owners that's dumping.
Takes a lot of land to have a landfill, too.
Yeah.
Well,
so, no, all that stuff is a bunch of malarkey. It's carried on. It sounds good. And you got groups that are talking. Yeah, they probably are part of a cult. A cult of victimization. Nobody's stopping schools today from having what they programs that they want. Tell me where. Public schools in St. Louis and around surrounding areas, those schools are occupied by black kids. They can have whatever the hell they want in there as long as the kids can show that they can read and write and do arithmetic. My goodness, how simple is that? It's all the state require because you're using public money. You got to have some accountability, and the accountability that you have to prove, the level is so low. Hey, black kids go to these private institutions for them to try to show some type of sympathy. On the college entrance exam, they spot black students even before they sit down and take the test. They spot them 310 points. They spot the Hispanic student. White students don't get no preference at all. The Asian student, he starts off with a negative 170 points, as one report said. Is that not discrimination?
Right. Well, Bianca, I'm going to wrap it up for today. I'm celebrating my birthday month. I do it for a whole month. And a piece of, what do you call it? I got to go out and buy it, though. I'm in the mood for carrot cake, so I'm going to go out and get me some. I'll talk to you guys tomorrow.